Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, the IMF's latest Global Financial Stability Report says the economic recovery is still on track, with a few caveats.
So investors should be attuned to the risk associated with rising interest rates. There have been 10 years or many years since rates have been very low, volatility has been very low. And also, we suggest that investors should stay attuned to the risk of possible escalating trade protectionism.
The Global Financial Stability Report, or GFSR, as it's commonly known, is published twice a year and looks at the risks facing the global financial system. The objective is to prevent future crises by highlighting policies that might help mitigate some of those risks. Fabio Natalucci is Deputy Director of the IMF's Monetary and Capital Markets Department and heads the team of economists who write the overview chapter of the report. So how does one go about assessing the stability of the global financial system? What does this report focus on mainly?
So the framework for assessing financial stability that we use here at the Fund comprises of two elements. One element has to do with market intelligence. So we go out, we talk to market participants, and we try to stay in, as much as possible in touch with what's going on in financial markets. Financial markets are very dynamic. The market structure is changing very rapidly. Technology is changing very rapidly. So we want to get a good sense of what the emerging threats in terms of financial stabilities are. And you need to be close to the markets and speak their language. Then there's a second component of this approach, of this framework that we use, which is a more systematic structure way. This has been introduced in the GFSR in October 2017. It's called Growth at Risk. The Growth at Risk assessment essentially provides forecasts of GDP growth outcomes, so in terms of probability distribution at different horizons, say 1 year ahead, 2 year ahead, 3 year ahead, as a function of the current state of economic and financial conditions. Essentially, the exercise consists of we have a shock. Whatever, it could be a trade shock, it could be a financial condition shock. Yeah. So we are very much agnostic on what the shocks could be and what the odds of shocks are. But then we assess how that shock impacts financial conditions, how financial conditions get filtered to various vulnerabilities that are built through the financial system, and then come up what the impact of this distribution of growth is. This is the framework.
So what does the report find in today's economy?
Now, through the prism of this framework, our assessment is that short-term risks to financial stability have increased somewhat, while medium-term vulnerabilities or medium-term financial stability risks remain high. The assessment reflects essentially what they are still relatively easy financial conditions. They are supportive of growth in the near term, which that's a good thing. They also, after years of very low interest rate, low volatility, are leading to a build-up of medium-term vulnerabilities that put growth at risk.
How would you compare it to your report 6 months ago?
Right, so 6 months ago, we've seen a somewhat increase in short-term financial stability risk, while financial stability risk in the medium term remain elevated. The driver of this modest increase in financial stability risk in the short term, essentially you can pull it back to the VIX tantrum, the spike in volatility that global market equity markets have experienced in early February. This is what we call the VIX tantrum.
I see.
As well as recent declines in asset prices that reflect essentially rising concern about an escalation of trade tensions. And so this decline essentially in risky asset prices have translated in somewhat tighter financial conditions, and so somewhat more elevated financial stability risk in the short term.
So every country has their own approach to monetary policy and to trade. To what extent do low-income countries and emerging market economies, to what extent are they affected by policies in advanced economies like Europe or America?
So let me start saying something about monetary policy, the stance of monetary policy first. Since the financial crisis, monetary policy has been very accommodative. This has been true across a number of countries. And that accommodation has been crucial to sustain the global economic recovery, to help essentially the global economy recover post-financial crisis.
When you say accommodative, what do you mean by that?
Accommodative means that the central banks have cut interest rates, the policy rate to zero, in some cases they've gone below zero, and then have they also used tools, the so-called unconventional tools, so expanding their balance sheet, going out and buying assets. So this easing of financial conditions has been necessary to help the global economy recover. Now, with the pace of economic recovery, the economic growth picking up, with the recovery becoming more synchronized, Monetary policy authorities in a number of advanced countries have either started or gearing up to normalize monetary policy, which means raising interest rate, the policy rates, and well, start thinking about shrinking the balance sheet. So far, financial markets have adjusted in a relatively smooth way to the gradual pace of monetary normalization, and they also benefited from very clear communication on the part of central bank. Now, that said, central bankers face a balancing act here, which is maintaining the appropriate stance of easy monetary policy to continue to support the global recovery, as well as trying to address this buildup of financial vulnerabilities that I described before, mm-hmm. so that essentially they can slow down the buildup of financial stability that could put growth at risk over the medium term. What are these challenges that they're facing? An example could be an inflation surprise, right? So you could either have a print of inflation that is higher than expected, or investor could decide to reprice inflation risk. If that happens, essentially the pace of tightening in the US, for example, could be faster than market expect. That would imply a tightening of financial conditions, and that would essentially increase the financial stability risk and put growth at risk over the medium term, as I said before.
So what does that mean for these low-income countries and emerging markets?
I was going to get there. Now, if you think about in terms of the scene through the lenses of emerging market, the emerging market, generally speaking, as an asset class, they have benefited from easy financial conditions and favorable investor sentiment over the years, right? This has translated essentially into a lot of inflows into emerging markets, and even weaker emerging market economy have been able to issue debt at very favorable, a cheap condition. Now, if there is a tightening in financial condition, for example, as a result of the inflation shock I mentioned, this condition would tighten, could be accompanied by an increase in risk aversion on the part of investor, and portfolio flows essentially could reverse. It could be come back from emerging markets. It could expose some of the weaknesses that have been, in some sense, covered by the easy financial condition over the years.
So this report is, in fact, all about looking at risks and vulnerabilities. What are the key financial vulnerabilities that you're worried about?
Right. So this is one. Let me add a couple of things more in terms of the emerging market. One could be that there's a larger role played by fickle or flighty investor in emerging markets, or a non-dedicated emerging market investor that could be there because of the conditions now, but could essentially decide to exit the asset class.
Short-term investors.
Short-term investors that are not necessarily emerging markets dedicated. And so now they see opportunistically that there are higher yielding assets in emerging markets, but when rates start moving higher, they might decide to invest somewhere else. Another is that even weaker emerging markets have been able to access capital markets. And so, of course, when conditions tighten, these weaknesses would be exposed. Another one is a sharp deterioration in debt sustainability in a number of countries. So the debt has been rising very fast, as well as the terms of lending have become more complex. So the investor base in emerging markets has broadened, starting to include more private investors. So in the event of restructuring, those restructuring could be more complicated. Mm. This is to provide a broader picture of emerging market. Now, we also look at other vulnerabilities. Another one is that we take a look at valuation of risky asset prices to get a sense whether those valuations are stretched or not. And our assessment is, in fact, that valuations are stretched in many markets. In credits, we see some late-stage credit cycle dynamics. So we see corporate bond spreads being narrow. We see issue of risky bonds having increased. And we look at case study, which is the leverage lending market in the U.S., which is traditionally a barometer of risk-taking. And issuance there, for example, hit a record high in 2017. We've seen some of the dynamics that are reminiscent of the pre-crisis period. Okay, so let me step back for a second. Post-financial crisis, a number of steps have been taken in the regulatory world to improve the health of the banking sector. So capital is higher, liquidity is improved, there's a better infrastructure to deal with resolution, and a number of other steps taken that makes essentially the core of the financial system, so the bank, safer. Now, there are still some vulnerabilities in the banking sector. So the one specifically we look at is non-US banks. They are main player in dollar assets. And so essentially they provide credit, they provide trade credit, loans, and so on. And then they need to fund on the liability side of the balance sheet these dollars. And we find out essentially that there's a structural dollar liquidity mismatch among non-US banks. What I mean by structural dollar liquidity mismatch is that they rely on short-term wholesale funding for about 70% of their funding. That implies that if there is a tightening in financial conditions, strain in these markets, they could be exposed essentially to the need to fund their asset side. And the marginal source of liquidity usually is the FX market, and that market can be very volatile and expensive or even not available at times.
So there is a section in the report on crypto assets. Now, are crypto assets seen as a potential benefit or a liability?
Right. So we try to strike a balanced assessment of crypto assets. Of course, amid this stretched valuation in many risky assets, we have seen this crypto asset erupting into the financial landscape. So in terms of the benefits, we believe that some of the potential technical advances that are behind crypto assets could have the potential to make payment system and financial infrastructure more efficient. Mm. So to us, that's a benefit. So there's something there on the technology, essentially, that could improve the efficiency, financial inclusion, and so on. So a number of benefits. There are, of course, some risks. Crypto assets have been afflicted by fraud, security breaches, operational failures, have been associated with illicit activities. And so our financial stability assessment, because this is what the report does, so as I keep aside investor protection issues and money laundering and so on. In terms of strictly of financial stability, we think that at present, crypto assets do not pose a significant financial stability risk, part is driven by the sheer size of crypto assets. Of course, they could pose greater risk in the future if their use became more widespread and there were an appropriate safeguard. So the policy recommendation, in some sense, that we have in mind here is that future policymakers should be nimble, should be innovative, should be cooperative, and there is a role that the fund can play here in advancing the agenda of regulation crypto asset by providing advice, and as well as serving essentially as a forum for international cooperation and dialogue on crypto assets.
So is this the first time that the GFSR looks at crypto assets?
To my knowledge, yes.
What kind of guidance does the report offer to policymakers? I mean, what should policymakers be focused on now to ensure stability and growth in the longer term?
So we have a number of recommendations along different dimensions. So in terms of monetary policy, our recommendation is that central bank should continue to normalize monetary policy in a gradual way, as I've done so far, and they should communicate their decision clearly.
So in other words, they need to, if they're going to raise interest rates, they need to do it slowly.
They need to do gradually. Mm-hmm. Of course, this assessment is based on the evolution of the underlying economy. And so this gradualism is based on an assessment of what the recovery is. It should be data dependent. So based on what the performance of the underlying economy is, then you should start thinking about removing or withdrawing monetary policy accommodation. But I also want to highlight, though, that the importance of having clear communication here. We also recommend that investors remain attuned to the risk associated with rising interest rates. There have been 10 years or many years since rates have been very low. Volatility has been very low. So investors should be attuned to this risk and avoid complacency. And also, we suggest that investors should stay attuned to the risk of possible escalating trade protectionism. This has been a big issue in recent weeks. We have seen risky asset price declining on this concern. So it's important that investors remain attuned to this risk. Another recommendation has to do with emerging markets. You asked before. We think that emerging markets, low-income countries, should build buffers against external risk so that they can be prepared in the event of a shock. And then finally, policymakers should ensure that the post-crisis regulatory reform is completed and implemented, and they should resist callback for rollback of reforms.
Mm. And looking into the future, 6 months from now, when you publish your next GFSR report, are you confident that there will be fewer risks out there?
The recovery has been gradual, but it's picking up pace, it's become more synchronized. And so at least in the short term, we see the risk being balanced on the downside and the upside. So I work in the financial stability world, so we tend to be more preoccupied with risk on the downside, if you want. So it's very important that we continue to use these two approaches in some sense. We want to use this structural, systematic approach to think about shocks affect financial conditions and financial vulnerabilities. Also, we want to continue to be in touch with markets, understand what's new, what's emerging, where financial innovation is, to stay as close as possible to the frontier of financial markets.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Fabio Natalucci is Deputy Director of the IMF's Monetary and Capital Markets Department and oversees the writing of the overview chapter in the Global Financial Stability Report. You can read the full GFSR report at imf.org. And if you like this podcast, you can subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts, and you can now follow us on Twitter @IMF_podcast.